protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, LeaderShield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Electronic invoices from owners calling other vendors who can pay through horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only a low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
You showed me how to do exactly what you do, how I fell in love with you. You walk into a room and people fall for you, how I wanna be like you.
Back about, well, exactly actually, 90 minutes in, 90 to come, Tony Black joins us, and we got plenty of high wire act horsemanship to discuss with Tony. On Monday, when Mig was with us, we talked about Errat Ortiz and the way he came in on Luis Saez, that in the Lexington. Louis persevered and powered to a victory. Then yesterday, a difficult and unfortunate incident, a heel clip that was essentially caused when Flavian Pratt and his mount Foreign Relations just was lugging in terribly, Tony. Let's start with that one because it was the most immediate. And talk about how you saw this and what people should think.
Well, the way I saw it, Steve, I mean, his horse did have a tendency to be lugging in, but when it comes down to coming, letting your horse, or not being able to control your horse and still staying in a aerodynamic down position on that horse, it kind of it makes it an unexcusable act. If your horse is lugging in that bad to where you're going to drop somebody and the horse that was on his heels, he dropped, you stand up on that horse. You make sure you don't let him get over. If the horse is lugging in that bad, he better go through the inside fence after he drops somebody for me to have the feeling that he couldn't control him. I think he could have controlled him, but he didn't make quite enough effort to keep that horse from coming in as quick as he did. It's careless riding, and I understand there was some lugging in. But like I said, winning the race becomes secondary when it comes down to, am I going to drop somebody? Or do I have to stand up and maybe cause this horse not to be able to win or get to the next horse in front of me? You stand up. You make sure he doesn't come in. Now, he was either thinking he maybe can let him drift in and let him still run because he might have thought he was just barely clear of that horse that he dropped. Well, he wasn't. You know, it's extremely careless. So I know he's a good rider, and good riders, they prove one thing. Good and the best riders in the country make mistakes. You know, listen, there's been riders in name races that come into the wire in the Kentucky Derby. Who was it? Our Shoemaker stood up before the wire?
Yep.
You know, you make mistakes. It's a high-pressure business. It's a highly physical, athletic event. And sometimes you make mistakes because you try too hard. And trying too hard is another example of trying real hard was the second race that you showed me where Arid Ortiz wanted to get his horse to come over and eyeball the horse that was on the fence. Now, that's generally what riders do at times. You know, you want to make your horse, horses on the inside that are on the fence sometimes are easily intimidated by the outside horse. But I learned one thing. You're not always right in doing this. If you stayed in the middle of the track 5-6 widths of a horse off of him, that horse might have got lackadaisical that was on the fence, not really eyeballed you and didn't become overly courageous and competitive, and you might have got by him and won the race. When you brought your horse over to that horse that was on the fence, you actually brought the competitive spirit out of that horse. He became more courageous, and he dug in, and you almost caused him. You wind up second, and you make him actually run the best race of his life and really dig in, and you made him become more competitive, and he won the race anyway. But you don't know that until after you do it. You know, I've come around horses and didn't have a chance to head my horse in. I was 5-6 wide, stayed out in the middle of the track, threw off, and won the race. And I also have done situations like what Ari just did. He came around. He was about 5 widths of a horse off of that horse. And he wanted to get his horse to eyeball him and get real competitive. He brought him over to that horse, and he brought the competitive spirit out of that inside horse, and that horse won anyway. But you don't know that until after you do it. You know, horses have different personalities and have different things that sparks them and makes them want to try harder. In that particular case, what he did made that horse try harder, or the jock just had enough horse to overcome it anyway. But it's a tough game. And, you know, when you look at these things that happen, it's easy to be a Monday morning quarterback. But, you know, you can have an opinion about what somebody did. But at the time they were out there and what they felt, you don't feel. You know, obviously, you know, he felt like he had to get over to that horse. Well, it didn't work this time. It might work 75% of the time. And this was one of the 25% of times it didn't work.
A couple of things. Let's go back to Pratt for a second, and it has to be tough, Tony. Here you are in deep stretch. You're within reach of winning a race. You're actually going to cross the wire first in this case. I mean, it's got to be physically. I mean, in terms of making the mental acknowledgement in a split second,
right,
that, you know, and you got, you know, the horse you're passing or the horse that's behind you, you know, you you're hoping, I'm sure, that you're clear, or that, you know, that that horse might be slowing down enough to, or you know,
right,
is gonna check up successfully, because anybody in the position that Pratt was in has been in the position that Tyler's been in.
Yeah, you know, like you're saying, you know, there's been a time. It's unfortunate that horse probably only clicked heels once or twice, and that the once or twice that it clicked heels caused him to stumble to a degree where the rider came off. Now, there's been times that you've clipped horses' heels, and I can remember, you know, going down the stretch, somebody came over, and you go, click, 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 and then you just, and you grab him, and you take back off of him, and nobody even gets a, other than, well, what'd you chuck your horse for? Well, I was on his heels, but I didn't fall, so it doesn't become to the steward's attention, and I might have finished fifth or sixth, and the horse that did that won the race or finished second. You ain't going to claim foul and make it come to the steward's attention. This particular case came to the steward's attention because somebody hit the ground. But also, it is careless to the degree where if he's thinking that horse is clear of the horse behind him, he's wrong. And if the thrill of victory is overpowering his sense of safety, he's wrong. You can't let that thrill, the potential thrill of victory, that forgive you of making a mistake that might cause someone else injury or horse injury. And that's what occurred in this particular case. It's not forgivable. There's a penalty that goes with that, and, you know, you take the days, and that's what you do. You know, there are times where riders become aggressive. In that other incident, I can remember the first time, like, I was always known as being a pretty tight rider, but when I can remember in the early 70s, I'm coming down the stretch, I got my buddy in front of me. He's Vince Percalli's on a horse. It looks like he's going to win the race, but it looks like I got a shot of beating him, maybe. And here comes Benny Feliciano up on the inside of me. And boy, I said, I'm going to catch his horse on the lead. Benny ain't going to catch him. I'm going to catch him. And I put Benny up against the fence, had him screaming for an eighth of a mile. Bo on the lead wound up. This was the old Gooey. When you were talking about Gooey yesterday, the other day.
Last week.
And here, Jimbo won the race anyway. Benny finished. I think I beat him or whatever it was. If I didn't beat him, they took me down. If I did beat him, if he might have beat me anyway. But anyway, I go back to the jocks room at Bowie. I'm washing my face in the bucket, and I get somebody comes up behind me and taps me on the shoulder. This was at Bowie. I pick my head up out of the bucket, turn, and I get suckered. And it's Benny. He was friggin' hot, and he sucker punched me. And then we went to wrestle, and I put one of my pancake wrestling underhook moves on him, and then they broke it up. So that was my first fight, too. But that was also trying to win the race, and overpowering thoughts of winning overpowered my thought of what I should do. Ride my horse, try to catch the horse in the lead, and then don't worry about Benny catching him, you know, because I'm going to try to catch him. Instead, I got punched. First fight in the, that was my first fight in the jocks room, too. I didn't have many fights, but Benny and I have been friends and laughed about it over the years. But that was in the 70s, so. Plenty of water under the bridge by then.
that's great. And then on the IRAD story, before we wrap, you know, I was surprised, actually, that Mig was as critical as he was. I know that that IRAD came a number of paths over, and it felt on the pan that it was menacing. However, this was one of those cases where it was valuable to look at the head on.
Right.
And
the inside horse has a tendency to push back also.
A little bit, exactly. Saez, you know, if there was any intimidation, Saez certainly didn't reflect it in his body language. He absolutely did not break, you know, his rhythm or stride with you know, Arabian Lion looming over him in First Mission. And he even leaned out a couple of strides. On the head on, it doesn't look as egregious, and I think it's because of the IRAD incident with the bug. You know, when he right. when he literally did just go to savage the kid essentially and use his mount as essentially as a battering ram.
He's being judged on what he has done in the past.
Yeah.
In this particular incident, actually. It worked to where he might have learned something. Sometimes when you're a little wide, you should stay a little wide instead of bringing your horse over, which you have to bring him over. And when you do lay on the other horse, it's not always going to be an intimidating effect that causes that inside horse to stick his toes in, even if he is near the fence. At times, like I said, you bring the competitive spirit out of that inside horse, and he's a fighter, and he fights back, and you've actually caused him to dig in yeah. harder, and you might have beat him if you stayed in the middle of the racetrack and left him alone. You might have, but you don't know this stuff until after it's over. You might have beat him if you stayed wide and he didn't catch a direct eyeball on you, and you didn't bring out that extreme competitive spirit of that horse. He's actually a hard runner and a competitive individual. But I think Arid, when they look at him doing something to this degree, which if it was anybody else, they'd say, you know what, did a good job. He tried to, get his horse to win. They would have looked at it that way. But since it was Arid, they say, this kid does his stuff a lot, and he overdoes it a lot. Maybe he didn't overdo it, but he did too much, and he really didn't. I think he rode a race that it was the way you should ride at times. But like I said, it doesn't always work to your benefit when you do that. You maybe just cause the other horse to dig in harder, and that's what he did, and that does happen. But like I said, you don't know until after it's all over. He might have learned something a little bit about that. You don't always intimidate by laying on a horse. Sometimes you make them more courageous.
Well, and there was also actually there was even one more that it occurred to me when it happened, in terms of changing path. I'm trying to think of, and I'm going to forget. I try to book when I see them when they pop up, particularly on Twitter. I try to bookmark them and then go back. But I did go back and look, but I couldn't find the one.
You know, the one thing that people tell you when you change paths like that, and many a times you do it and it really works out and you win. Like, if you'd have stayed straight, you wouldn't have run as far. Changing paths, you're having the angle in, you're costing your horse you more ground. But you know what? It doesn't really feel like that ever when you angle your horse in. Like that, oh, I'm running further because I'm heading in. I'm heading diagonal instead of straight.
Right.
Because what you're trying to do is intimidate the other horse, and that's the angling in doesn't make it, you're running further because you're angling in. And over the years, not so much in this day and age, but when I was starting out riding and a kid, and even in the latter stages of my career, it was almost a point of embarrassment and disrespect if you let a horse through and he beat you on the inside.
Right.
If he came through and you, what's that guy doing? What'd you do, fall asleep at the wheel? How come you left the easy pass lane open on the inside? That's the easy pass lane. You don't leave the easy pass lane open. So you almost had to always, maybe even at a track where the track had a reputation of being slow on the fence, you didn't want to be on the fence, but you didn't want anybody beating you on the fence.
Hmm.
And that was a tough way to ride. And Parks had that. Keystone had the reputation of Philadelphia
right.
Park, whatever,
right.
Being dead fence. Well, you didn't want to be on the fence, but be damned if you would want somebody to come through on the fence and beat you. Oh, no, that's disrespectful. You were disrespecting yourself, and you were discrediting yourself as a rider. You don't come through on me and beat me. Come around. I might not want to be on the fence, but you ain't beating me on the fence. You come around me. And that's the mentality that exists with jockeys. A lot of it's left over from the good old days.
Well, and it, what's funny about internet critique, I'm glad you said that the way you did, with me not prompting it, because there's this reverence for, Angel Cordero and
right.
Georgie Velasquez and Jacinto and, hard riding riders that, that put guys in tight everybody says, that never would have happened. You never would have done that if Angel. Okay. So, and now see Richie on Monday said that he doesn't want to hear that this is like, he's like the Angel Cordero of this era.
Yeah.
It This may be one of those cases, Tony. Is this one of those cases where everything else has changed around us and you know?
Yeah, to some degree, you're right. Things have changed. You know, nothing stays the same. And you mentioned writers like Velasquez, Angel Cordero, you know, we can talk about when he wrote in the Preakness and Codex and different incidents.
Yep.
But he was a hard, aggressive writer, you know? And I'll never forget when I wrote My Juliet in the Vosburgh, and he wrote Bold Forbes. And we left the gate, and we played the old game. You want to be on the inside, I want you to come around. You come around me, I'm going to park you on the outside fence with Bold Forbes, right? And then you want to come back through on me, I'm going to keep the fence closed up. Well, this was in the Vosburgh, and it's funny, a few years ago I saw Angel when we were at Saratoga, and My Juliet was getting inducted into the Hall of Fame, and I was the last living handler of My Juliet. So we went up there, and I said, hey, Angel, how about the Vosburgh that day? You claimed foul against me. I said, did they take the number down? And he looked at me. He said, you know what happened. Oh, that's right. They took your number down. I forgot. You bothered Freetex leaving the gate. He wanted to get over to me so quick. He bothered the horse that was another competitor in the race. I know what he was doing. And he wanted to get either over
That's
to me in
great.
Front of me, and I stopped him from getting over to me in front of me, and I made him play that. You want to be on the inside? I don't want you on the inside. You want to come around me? You're going to go real wide. You want to come back on the inside? I don't want you on the inside. And we played that game for the whole race and then he claimed foul, and they took him down. And they placed him third.
That's what he deserved. A little taste of his own medicine.
Yeah, and I thought to myself, maybe the stewards looked at this and said, you know what? He does it enough. Why didn't he handle it better? You know, we're going to take him down for bothering Freetex, leaving
great.
The gate black up.
That's so great.
But aggressive riding has changed in a lot of degrees of it, you know, but you still have to be safety. Number one priority.
Exactly.
Do you know, I never dropped anybody. I'll let you go real quick.
Yeah.
All the years I rode, and I was known as being a pretty tight rider, I guess, you know, I never dropped anybody, and I thought about that. Never dropped anybody. Somebody, you know, that's a hell of a thing to say, that you never dropped a rider, and you were a rider that rode tight. I might have got my number taken down, but I didn't get dropped them.
Well, Tony, this is why everybody loves listening to you, why they look forward to your visits. I appreciate it.
Oh, I love listening to you too, Stephen. I missed it a little bit the last few days, but you keep up the good work. You're the best thing that could ever happen to racing, and I enjoy listening to you, and I enjoy talking with you. I love you, brother. You take care.
Love you too. Tony Black, everybody, the one and only, and a legend on the flat. How about a legend over the obstacles? Sean Clancy is going to join us. The Wee Clancy, as I've named him. I don't know if he's accepting of my reference to him as the Wee Clancy, but he joins us now, Sean.
Good morning, Steve. How's it going over there?
Outstanding. And
where are you these days?
I'm home for another 24 hours.
Nice.
And then we head to the Ville, 2 weeks plus in Kentucky. And as I told you yesterday, a important breaking news announcement. Tina and I will attend the Iroquois Steeplechase at Pershing.
Wow. Wow. I got pool, huh? I mean, I didn't think I was actually convincing anybody of anything. I must have helped there a little, huh?
I wasn't going to go through another spring and summer of being abused for not coming to Iroquois, and between your exhortation and Woodbury in the background, Woody.
Yeah, he helped, right?
He helped. Woody made it happen, and they're pleased to have me come do a couple of days at the race course. And
nice.
I mean, everybody, it's funny. Everybody I've mentioned it to now in a week or 10 days since we booked the flights and everything, well, book the flight for Tina. I'm going to drive from Louisville, which is nothing. Everybody has said, you're not going to believe it. Hopefully the weather's perfect, because if it is, you won't believe the crowd, and you know that it's even better than Far Hills, which I don't want Guy. Hopefully that doesn't get back to Guy Torsiglieri.
We won't say a word.
And Tina, I'll tell you how much you've done a great job selling this. Tina is bypassing Derby in favor of Iroquois.
Whoa, wow. I got marketing pool, huh? How about that?
Right?
I hope it doesn't let her down.
No, it won't. It won't.
Look, you'll love it. It's a fun week. It's a great town, obviously. Great Carter Racing. Beautiful course. I mean, it's everything you want to play in a venue. And I've said it, but I think I've said it on this call. I've certainly written about it. And to me, wherever you go horse racing, you have to remember that's the best version of horse racing that they can put on for the crowd, the place, the money they have. And I think that's important wherever you go. That's what when we go to the steeplechase meets around the country, you just look around and say, this is the best version of horse racing. It's, you know, Laytown is the best version of horse racing. Yeah, it's on a beach, which is amazing, but that's their best version of horse racing. I think that's important to keep in mind when you go to these places.
Well, since you mentioned Ireland, in the last 45 minutes or so, we had Charlie O'Neill from Irish Thoroughbred Marketing.
Nice.
And I got and you were feted. He raved about you, but I got invited to go to Gorsebridge to the Brees sale. So I think we're going to go do broadcast a couple of days from Gorsebridge.
I love it. God, I want to be you when I grow up.
I thought you wanted to be your brother. You wanted to be Joe.
Nah, I could never be him.
All right. Yeah, you're right.
I could be you. Joey, no chance. I mean, that's too high a mountain to think about.
I'm on Everest, I guess. One of those way stations.
Yeah, exactly,
a staging.
Yeah.
I'm a staging right. Area.
Exactly. I can get to those. Yeah.
So great.
You only need one tank of oxygen and, you know, like only seven layers of, thermal wear. Yeah, I think I can get there.
Well, and obviously this is going to be an invite for Tom Law to climb, to mountain climb. Does he do that too? Does he mountain climb?
He does it all. He's another one. He's way out there. I could never be him either. So yeah, he's way out there.
Let's feather in what's going on, because of course we're at Butler this weekend and Middleburg, but. The River D team is off to a tremendous start. Talk about the weekend, and I mean, we're only what, 4 weeks into the season, and you're rolling.
Sorry, I just had a neighbor yelling at me. I missed the intro there.
Well, no, I just was saying, you know, we're coming up on it's a big timber Saturday, Grand National at Butler, but Middleburg as well. But you're off to a tremendous start. The season is, what, 3 weeks old, 4 weeks old, and River D is hitting on all cylinders.
Yeah, we're off to a good start, which is fun. We had some, you know, this game, you just have to have, you have to have horses for spots, and Fitzgerald, she just fit great, and a filly mare maiden at Old Dominion, and then Seizing the Dream, Sandra Webb picked out a great spot for him at Tryon, which is beautiful, and Gordon's Jet is a new horse to us. He found a perfect spot in a ratings race at Tryon. So, you know, when you talk to, and it's like at Saratoga, and those guys are going for leading trainer, and they're talking about it, just the spots fell their way. And, you know, Todd talks about it, Chad talks about it, it's like getting horses in, having the right spots, the right conditions, and that's certainly applied so far. So it's fun when you have horses for the right spots. You know, sometimes you're going in races where you're not really overly confident. It's not the spot you want. Those spots were exactly what we wanted. So that felt good.
The past weekend, Tryon and My Lady's Manor, and some notable performances and things to take away. I did mention earlier that, because we were talking about Irish breds, and actually you should probably take a second, Sean, and talk about the mechanism in a second. But I did say that Leslie Young and Leaper's Fork, Tom Garo, won the Timber, the 3 mile My Lady's Manor feature. Talk for a minute about the process and what you advise people that are thinking of, you know, getting into it and buying horses in Ireland, what, you know, what it is involved and how complex it is or how easy.
I mean, it's not that complex. I mean, it's just a matter of knowing the product and knowing who you want to buy from, and conditions are so important. I mean, for here, you want horses to fit conditions. That's important. Years ago, we really didn't buy Irish point-to-pointers or even British point-to-pointers, those horses that are, you know, 4 and 5 year olds that have only run at a point-to-point or two or bumper, or bumpers over there. And that's changed over the last 4 or 5 years, and it's been interesting that those horses have proven to be able to. It used to be they were probably a little soft and a little backward and couldn't handle our ground and didn't really thrive here, but that's changed. Just like with the Mean Queen and other horses that have come over and done it. So that's kind of a new angle. Again, you need the right. I do think pedigree is important and confirmation is important. You know, you don't want those big national hunt chasers and big heavy horses. You want to kind of nifty, almost like a, you know, a little bit like an American looking horse. So I think that's changed, but. Look, Ireland, you know, they've got the inventory, and you know, it's you want to go to a place where the inventory, they have a lot of inventory, and then you can buy horses from there. Same with England. I mean, it's been, you know, horses have always come over here from Ireland and England, but over the last, you know, 10-20 years, it's changed. It's going even more that way. And I think a lot of it is the American flat horse is so hard to buy now. You know, we used to be able to just pick up, you know, if there was a $25,000 to $50,000 turf horse in New York, you could basically buy that horse and make him a jumper. Now those horses just aren't being sold because, you know, you have those turf options in New York and different places. The purses have gone up, you know, and look, trainers are less likely to sell horses because of horse inventory, the foal crop and everything else. So that's changed. I mean, it's gotten to be much harder to buy the right kind of horses for steeplechasing in this country. So that's when people started looking at different places. And I think that, you know, really Richard Valentine probably really kicked it. It was always happening, but all the way back to Jimmy Lorenzo and Nine Pins and Highland Bud and those horses. But Demonstrative really, you know, he kind of kind of raised the awareness and raised the people's interest a little more. Now it's just a great pipeline to buy horses.
And you know, you're sort of giving it the steeplechase spin, but it's just as true for the flat. And you know, Sean, this conversation actually started inadvertently with Phil D'Amato, because I said to him at some point, it must have been in March, after he had won a couple of stakes with his turf runners, and I asked him point blank. I said, "Are your clients? I mean, is this a reaction to, you know, the dominance of Baffert and Sadler and so forth out there on the main track in the classic division?" And he said, "Absolutely." He said, "My clients can go and find these horses, you know, Red Baron and, you know, Rancho Temescal come to mind." He said, "We can buy horses, a turf horse, for, you know, a third of what a flat dirt horse is going to cost. And not only is it cheaper, the horse is going to campaign in a way that invariably they can run till they're 5, 6, 7.
Yeah, no question. No, it's changed quite a bit on the flat too, and exactly that. I mean, it's just another angle. Turf racing has gotten more popular. I was thinking back the other day about, I got a Goff's, the sales company, they hired me, and I'm looking back, I mean, it had to be 2007, 2008, 2009, something like that, to try to market their sales to American buyers. And then I actually worked for Irish Thoroughbred Marketing as kind of an American liaison. And looking back on that, it was the most difficult difficult process to promote. I mean, to convince people that you could go over there and go to the yearling sales and go to the horse and training sales and bring horses back. And the reaction was always, oh, what do I want a turf horse for? Why do I want that? What's the point of that? And a few people went. I mean, West Point went over there with us and a few others. But, I mean, I talked to a lot of people, and basically they just – it wasn't like, oh, I think that's a great idea, but I can't do it. It was – that's why would I do that? That's just a silly idea. And in the matter of, you know, 10, 15 years, you've seen that has completely changed to where now the American buyers are going over there and buying yearlings. They're buying horses of racing age. And I think it's just, you know, their purses are so low over there. So people need to sell horses. So that's part of it too. But, and America's racing has changed to where turf racing is that much more prevalent. And obviously the best turf horses are over there. You know, we always talk about you can't stand a turf stallion here. And somehow turf racing has gotten more and more popular with bigger purses, and we're buying a lot of horses from over there. But yeah, it's dramatically changed in 10, 15 years. And I'm not, maybe I wasn't a great salesman and couldn't convince people to do it, but you look with Chad Brown and Mike Ryan and those guys Mike Ryan really started doing it and buying those yearlings and bringing them over, and lots of other people. I mean, it wasn't, you know, it was a good idea. It's whether you have the money that you can back up your idea, but yeah, it's changed dramatically over a decade, 10, 15 years.
Well, we're gonna continue to have these conversations leading up to the Gorsbridge sale, and the considering one topic that you know keeps getting brought up is the dwindling foal crop. There's a ready supply of horses over there, as you're referencing and as you're suggesting. We also see them coming from South America. There's other places that are breeding horses, producing horses.
Yeah, for sure. And look, until their purses get back to a level that makes it viable for the average owner to keep their horses. I mean, you look now, I mean, Judmon is they've sold horses over there for a lot of money and other owners. And you look at that, that model over there, it's always been that way. I mean, you want to be shopping in a market that has a flaw, has an opening. And if the opening is low purses, that's a great avenue. I mean, going all the way back, they used to buy a lot of jumpers in New Zealand because the New Zealand purses, they had really good horses, and the purses didn't match the quality of horse. So you go down there and buy nice horses. And that's where England is now. I mean, for an owner in England to make any money, he's got to really either be gambling or he's got to come up with a home run horse that can win the big races and stand at stud, go to Royal Ascot and places like that, or he's got to sell his horses, or he's got to gamble on his horses. And so there's any of that combination. So you see, you see people selling horses for good money because, you see good horses being sold for good money because they can't make that on the racetrack. And that's where they have a big problem. And it's really going to affect them. It's negatively affect their breeding program and their racing for sure. It's gotten harder and harder for them.
Well, this weekend, I mentioned what's going on, and we do have the Grade 2, Temple Gwathmey, on Saturday, and we've got three Irish breds involved in here, as it happens. You're involved on this card as well with that Awakened in the Glenwood, the 2 1/8 mile allowance hurdle. Some thoughts about this weekend. You've also got Mission Brief later on in that Virginia Equine Alliance maiden race in memory of Paul Fout.
Yeah, it's a good card at Middleburg. It'll be interesting weather-wise. It's been very dry here at Firm Ground, but the rain is supposed to come in during the day, so I keep watching the weather report. By noon it's 25%, and 1 it's 40%, and 2 o'clock it's 60%. So it might rain throughout the day, so that might make it interesting. Obviously, You know, it's snap decision return as a 9-year-old McGwathme. He's a standout in there, short field. So everybody's anxious to see him run. Some nice horses around him. I mean, Going Country's tough. Belfast Panthers has chased him before. As Paddington has chased him before and run well. And Radician is an awesome old horse. I mean, he's just 9 years old. He won the Appleton last year at Far Hills, won the David Sims last year. So it's a cool race. A bunch of, you know, really tough old timers clashing, which is cool. I mean, if you look at their, I'm looking at their form now. Radician's run 24 times over hurdles. As Paddington's run 35 times, Belfast Banter's run 25 times, Going Country, he's the least experienced with 10 starts, and Snap Decision's made, you know, this will be his 19th start. You look at Snap Decision, he's at 18 starts, 11 wins in 6 seconds, amazing record. His only off-the-board finish was his last start in the Grand National, so... cool race, and you know, anxious to get everybody, you know, to get started. It's a little lean, I guess, at the top. I mean, if you, you know, with Snap Decision is a standout, but he's, you know, he's 9 years old. And, you know, you don't have the Mean Queen. You might not have the depth at the top, but you know, similar to a flat racing, really, we kind of have the same problem. He's just hard to get nice horses at the top. But it's a good card. It'd be fun. I mean, it's 2 miles down the road from us, so it's a good local meet, so it'd be fun.
Home game.
Exactly.
As Jay Pridman would retort at that point. Talk about those maidens of yours. Rocket One as well, that 10 Strike has partnered up with you. Graham Waters is going to ride. That's the Wiley.
Yeah, like Rocket One's a new horse. We bought him from... Frank Fletcher Racing actually had him, and Brittany Russell had him, and then he went to Oakland Parks. We kind of chased him around a little bit. Cool horse. I mean, I think he ran a little point to point, did that fine. It'll be interesting. It was his first start over hurdles. Cost $600,000 as a yearling, so obviously this wasn't plan A for the original owners. But 10 Strike joined River D on him, so he's a new horse. I'm anxious to see him run. Mission Brief he's tried a few times, probably a notch below Straight Maidens, and I'm not sure I'm going to run him. I got to decide on that. Kind of ground dependent. And then Awaken, of course, you've seen him last year. He won a Shawan, won a Flat Racer Jumpers at Colonial Downs. Cool horse. And he's an allowance race, which is a good, you know, natural, logical spot for him. This is his 6-year-old debut. So I'm anxious to get him started. It'll be fun.
That coming at Middleburg, and the timber season got a nice full field, actually, in the Grand National. You got 7 that are coming forward, and starts the card, the $30,000 Grand National.
Yeah, it's a good race too. I mean, it's skewed, kind of used a little bit as a prep for the Maryland Hunt Cup, which is 4 miles next week, 22 fences. But the Grand National, it's always a good race. Just, you know, some same thing. Old veterans, Royal Ruse in there. Renegade River's a tough old veteran. Shootus is trying to kind of climb that ladder. Our friend did very well last year in the spring. Nice horse for Joe Davies. Without More Dues, tough. He's been around a long time. Monbeck Stream's done very well. He won both his timber starts last year for Leslie Young. Cool horse. Freddie Proctor's a standout in this division, the amateur riders. So he's live. Master Seville has done well for Mark Beecher. He's won both his starts this year, one through DQ. But he's 7. He's one of the kind of the younger horses trying to step up into that division. And then the timber race at Middleburg, don't forget that either. It's a stellar race with the likes of Cracker Factory, Mystic Strike, who's now 14, awesome old horse. He's 10 for 25 over timber. Storm Team is a neat old veteran of Jack Fisher's. Andy Amu's champion. He's coming back for his 13-year-old season.
Yep.
He was nearly flawless last year. And then Not Judging, Just Saying is another horse of Jack Fisher's in there. But that's a stellar race. You know, they're very different divisions, the timber divisions, as far as Maryland and Virginia. Virginia's smaller fences. It'd be quicker And it's on, you know, it's for horses like Andy Amu and Storm Team. They were hurdle stakes winners over hurdles. So that division, the timber division is a little different in Virginia compared to Maryland, where Maryland a little bit bigger fences and kind of a little slower. But if you stand watching the Grand National, it's not slow. I mean, they get running around there. So, yeah, it's a good weekend for the timber horses. And this time of year is fun. You get you get all these horses coming back. Most of them, but you know, a lot of them is first start this year. And it's fun to see him get going again.
I should mention, because he's been an object of a fair amount of kidding, Mr. Connecticut has made the transition and did show up at Camden a couple of weeks ago. And this, of course, the horse that Christophe Clement was training, and they had a lot of fun on the Fox show with Mr. Connecticut, and his career could be a long one on over the jumps.
Yeah, he switched. He switched from flat to jumps this winter. Actually, Julie Gavina had him and ran him first time out of Camden, and Ricky Hendricks claimed him, which not a lot of claiming goes on in steeplechasing. So that was an interesting move. It didn't run very well that day. But, you know, he's back. Ricky is taking the blinkers off him. He's running his maiden starter, which is kind of a new condition for steeplechasing, which is, it's actually a good condition. Kind of gives a little class relief to horses. It's for horses that started for a claiming price of $25,000 or less on the flat or over jumps, which is interesting. We actually never really had a condition that included any flat restrictions, and we just added this, and it's actually provided a nice new division for horses, just kind of between the, you know, maiden claimer that maybe you don't want to run for the price, and a straight maiden that might not be, you know, that kind of class. So it's been a good addition to the schedule. But that race is competitive. It's a tough race. And you see a horse like Quid, who's a proper maiden, he's in there because he had run for 25 on the flat, but he's only, you know, he's run four times over hurdles against straight maidens and hit the board, you know, earn checks each time. So he gets a little class relief for Julie Gamina, cool horse. So yeah, it's a good competitive race. So in a way, we've created some new divisions in steeplechasing where you have a filly, a mare maiden, you have a starter maiden and a straight maiden at Middleburg on Saturday. So, you know, you're gonna graduate three maidens, you know, and hopefully they go on, you know, come to Saratoga and places like that. That's the objective.
We should mention, too, before we wrap up, Lord Flincher, a very interesting participant in that race. This is Parkland Thoroughbreds, a homebred of theirs, the Flincher five-year-old, that they've moved to Kerry Breon. And this is an interesting, probably a sidebar, Sean, that you can riff on for a minute. You know, before you call in the retraining outfits, consider your campaigner over the jumps.
Yeah, for sure. Look, Lord Flincher's, you know, he had some decent flat career. He made $100,000, yep. And he's 5 years old. They've gelded him and switched him to hurdle racing. Gives the owner some another fun angle to have the horse do, and it adds another. The great thing about steeplechasing, I think this is what gets a little lost, is it's a great segue to the next career, where now, I mean, Lord Flincher actually had, you know, he's learned to jump, he's learned to go cross country, he's gone through streams, and all these horses, and not just Lord Flincher, but any of these jumpers, you know, from the flat game where they were on the flat track every day, they're now living on farms going cross country. So, you know, it's an easy segue from steeplechasing to show jumping, fox hunting, eventing, trail riding, whatever the next endeavor is. So that part, you know, it's just the amount of steeplechase horses that get retired. I mean, I'm standing here on my farm. I got four of them out in the front field that, you know, just they're now retired and living a nice life. And you know, I have horses everywhere. I mean, I got a message, a text this morning of horse Douglas Road that we had on the flat, ran him over jumps, and retired, and he's, you know, he's in jumping a little show jump. So we take great pride in that. I mean, we take great care of our horses, and the objective is always, yeah, let's have some fun and have them run over fences for a while, and then they can go on and do something else, and that's important to us. I think the flat owners owning jumpers, I mean, that's really I mean, that's what we've always kind of, you always promote that and want that. And it, and we're getting some now. I mean, it's been fun to see some new owners coming in, new flat owners. I mean, flat owners new to steeplechasing, Matacat, and Ten Strike, and Parkland, those kind of people, which is great. But this isn't a new phenomenon. I mean, back in the day, Mrs. Ogden Phipps was leading owner in steeplechasing every year. Look, every year she wanted to be, she was. And those horses used to go from the flat to the jumps. And if you look back at their Top Bid and Happy Intellectual and Straight and True, and these horses, they were like running in, one of them ran in the Hopeful. And then one of them was champion over fences. And Paul Mellon used to do it. I mean, I worked for Burley Cox, the Hall of Famer. We'd stay in there at Camden. And I'd spent a couple winters down there. And a big, giant Ralph G. Smith van would pull up in his tractor trailer load. And these horses would step off the van. It was just this, the fleet of Rokeby Stable horses that were going from Mac Miller, one Hall of Famer, to another, Burley Cox. And, I mean, you just stood there in awe of these horses that were just, by Arts and Letters and Round Table, Bold Ruler. You're standing there going, like, oh, my God, look at these horses. And that was absolutely par for the course. That's how they trained. And Paul Mellon would have, every year he'd start the year with 10, 15 jumpers. As a kid, I remember riding Senator Brady and Lights and Music and these horses. And even before that, as a kid, watching Chapel Street and Mongogo and these horses. I mean, Paul Mellon would have, he was as big a jump owner as there's ever been. And there was a very natural, George Strawbridge did it for years. He had a flat string, and as soon as they weren't working out over on the flat, they would just go be jumpers. The whole group, they'd go, okay, now they're jumpers. Cafe Prince, Boston Chef, and these horses. I mean, that's just what everybody did. It was a very natural game where everybody played it. And it's been a little sad over the years where there's somehow this chasm between flat racing and steeplechasing has developed. It's so sad because we're all playing the same game. And it's just as our game struggles to keep its vitality, it's like you've got to have everybody pulling together. And if you look back in the history of steeplechasing, it was off. It was the flat people just moving over to the jump game. Sidney Waters trained flat horses and jumpers. I mean, it just was very natural. All the jump jockeys were galloping horses for all the flat owners in New York. And it was just, we were just an absolute part of thoroughbred racing. And I think it's kind of coming back a little that way, I really appreciate. And there's been a lot of hard work, and people have stepped in and tried to market and try to promote it and get people in. And I think it's an important way to look at it. You can't fight. I mean, you got to join together. It's just, if it's the only way our game will continue is everybody pulling in the same direction. And steeplechasing, we feel like we're just, we're part of thoroughbred racing. We've always wanted to be part of it. We always have been part of thoroughbred racing. We always want to be part of thoroughbred racing. And I think that's an important part to just keep in mind as you watch it.
Sean Clancy?
Sorry, that was a diatribe.
That was fabulous.
My soapbox,
fabulous.
I think it's important. I really think it's important.
Yeah,
I think you're just... For all of all the people in thoroughbred racing and even racing, look, the thoroughbred people need to have the harness people on side, and harness people need to have, everybody's got to be pulling in the same direction for horse sports to continue. And I think that's really, really important for all of us to remember.
Outstanding. Bye, Sean Clancy, everybody. This is horseracing.com for another few months before it transitions to the Saratoga special. And Sean, get lucky this weekend. And I can now officially say, I'll see you in Nashville.
I love it. I love it. I just took the words right out of my mouth. I was thinking to myself, man, we'll see you in Nashville.
I'll probably talk to you before that, though. Sean Clancy, everybody, always great. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you.
There it is. And he couldn't be more right. And particularly about what feels like a bit of a pendulum swing back to thoroughbred flat competition and outfits taking an interest and you know who actually helped raise that profile was Ken Ramsey and the Ramseys, right? When he sent over a couple, and there was that the crazy the thing with Davy Jacobson, was it Mabu that he claimed? Mabu ran for whatever, 80,000 or 100, and he poached Mabu, and three weeks before the Smithwick, I think he won the Smithwick, and I think I know it was a kind of a offbeat situation, but it at the same time, I think it kind of added some awareness. I'm just looking. It must have been the. It must have been the Turf Riders he did it for. I just looked at the Smithwick, and it wasn't the Smithwick. So late in the season, the Jonathan Sheppard Turf Riders Cup handicap. Jonathan Sheppard, there it is. And let's see how good the old memory is when it comes to this, right? Boy, it's further back, I guess, than I thought. It was Mabu. And it was, wow, it was in 2011. Oh, my God. That was 11 years ago. That's crazy. 12. Yeah. If I pulled it up, drawing away, and Davy Jacobson claimed Mabu, and I think for like 80, and they ate you at the age of 8. And Robbie Walsh rode, and they won the Turf Riders, won the Grade One. But at that time, and around that same time, was Ken Ramsey also. And I'm sure if I dug in, I'd find the horses, or I'm sure Sean and Joe could tell you off the top of their head. But there was a couple of them that were pretty nice, and competed. I don't know if they won, any of the big Grade Ones, but they were okay. All right, let's get crafty in here. Now we're running behind. I thought I had made up some ground, but I now have lost that ground again. And poor Seth Merrow may end up again may end up having to sit in the green room yet another morning here. I should tell everybody. I sent out Nick Tamaro couldn't be with us this morning. His daughter had gymnastics, so he apologized. But you do have not only that Keeneland carryover. You've also got the carryover from Sunday in New York, so that as well. And I wanted to give you some direction. So just a $37,000 pick six carryover, but it's actually a nice enough sequence. Starts in race 3, third level allowance sprinting, and then long on the grass, filly and mare maidens for 40, open company, a starter allowance going a mile on the main, so 6 by 10 by 9 in the first half, and then the second half, 25 claimer, 6.5 on the dirt with 10, this is before scratches. There's a first level allowance on the outer turf for 3 and ups. That's a 8 horse field with an entry, and it ends on the main track, 3 and up, New York bred, maiden 25. So nice enough sequence in New York as well. $37,000 carryover, $225,000 at Keeneland, and I just retweeted Marty McGee, who sent out the scratches, and there are some significant scratches in this sequence. We did want to mention, you heard earlier, American Rascal. This is the Curlin Lady Aurelia colt debuting, and there's going to be a lot of focus. If you want to watch that, it's at 132. And then in the third race today at Keeneland. They're going a mile on the grass, and I don't know if it's a great sign that Steve Asmussen, he already tried Ocean City. This is the Jackie's Warrior sibling by American Pharoah. Already tried Ocean City on the turf going a mile, and they're going to come back and do it again. He stumbled and never really got a chance. So he's going to come back in the same spot. He's the three, Ocean City. There's probably a lot of attention on Jonathan Thomas with Camellio, which I believe is George Strawbridge, who came up minutes ago. Yeah. However, there are two prices in this race. Right off Jerry, also for Brendan Walsh, is going to be a favorite, first turf start coming from synthetic. There are two prices in this race. The 10 and the 11, and since Jeff Franklin is standing by, from a pedigree standpoint, using Thoroughgraph numbers, Quiet Ride for Vicky Oliver is 20-1, the 10, and the 11 is 15-1, Berrettini, for Paul McGee. And both of these horses have a couple of hints that they could be okay in this spot. And I'm very interested. The third race, 204, you got two favorites that are okay, but if you're looking for prices, the 10 and the 11. So that's the early portion, and then the pick six starts in race four. I talked about it earlier. Jeff Franklin, good morning.
Hey, Steve. First off, if I can just take 30 seconds, I have to thank you for both of your two, the last two guests you had on. Tony Black, I could listen to that man talk till the cows come home. What? Not only does he have a wealth of knowledge and stories to boot, but he ties it all together meaningfully. He should be, to me, chief steward of the universe. I just love the guy. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And for those of us that have talked to a zillion jocks over the years, his comprehensive knowledge is so rare and so valued. I don't know what to say. Anyway, that's him. And then Sean, talking about Ireland in such great depth, I represented GBE Technologies in Dublin, Ireland. I was the president of their U.S. operations. So I was in Dublin every 3 weeks for years. And my greatest racing stories were at the Curragh. And I don't know if you've ever been out there, Steve, for the Irish Derby.
No.
Oh, my gosh, you missed it. No. I think it's one of the world's great racing venues. It's equal parts top Group One racing with Irish Country Fair. And 30,000 people just having a ball in the most beautiful venue. And the last time I was there, I was leaning against the railing, right next to the paddock, waiting for the horses to come over. And I was telling my friends, gosh, I can't wait to see Australia. He eventually won the race. He'd won the Epsom Derby 3 weeks previous for Aidan O'Brien. And my wife pokes me and says, look over your shoulder. And literally 2 feet from me, not 10 feet, not five, 2 feet from me was Australia. I could have reached over and grabbed his mane. And what a place, man. It's like where you can really, like I said, you bet three races, you go next door, you have a Guinness and meet some new friends and come back and do it again. And so, and finally, you mentioned Phil D'Amato. Well, good friends of mine own Hong Kong Harry, who is their recent, one of Phil's many recent Irish success stories. And he's won, how many graded stakes here in recent weeks? I think they paid $110 for him in an Irish auction. So,
yeah.
Yeah, there's some great value there. Anyway, sorry that I got off, but...
No, not at all.
So you picked two really fascinating races for us to discuss with the guys today.
Well,
I thought.
I hope so. And let me pull them out of this out of this jungle of PPs. Where do we want to go first?
Well, okay, I think we want to start
the Elkhorn.
Well, let's start with the Elkhorn. And you want to go first?
No, go ahead, because I said at the top of the show when I mentioned that we were, you know, doing the segment, and I told everybody the two races that we had tabbed. I picked the Elkhorn as much to listen to you as anything, because I find, and I really shouldn't call, you know, 12 furlongs a marathon distance, but it's a three-turn. Let's say three-turn races. I find them inscrutable a lot of the time, and part of that has to do with pace-making decisions, but when it comes to sheet reading, I'm curious what your thoughts are, because I frequently see these races, and the horses have very similar numbers and are within a couple of lengths of each other, and I don't even necessarily, Jeff, see obvious patterns that you can latch on to. So I really kind of want to hear your approach to a race like this.
Well, I think you summed it up perfectly. Race shape means everything in a mile-and-a-half race. And fortunately, I think you chose a race where really we have to respect that above all else. It's a nearly paceless race. My old buddy Channelmaker will break from the rail. He'll likely break running and maintain good position. He's the defending champion of this race and trained by the master, Bill Mott. And what I really like about him is that his last race was a throwout. I mean, he wasn't prepared for the start, so everybody's going to see he's run seventh. And his last couple of races before that are very unimpressive when you look at seventh, fourth, and tenth. And yet, his numbers are essentially as fast as ever, or nearly as fast as ever. So I'm starting the race with Channelmaker as a key, which surprises me. I'm not, you know, Channelmaker's older than I am, you know, and yet I figure by the time they're midway down the backside for the final, approaching the final turn, he's going to be first or second. And here's the problem with everybody else. Is it's going to be a congested race. It is so paceless that the only way to play a race like this is to isolate two or three contenders, in my view, box them and keep your fingers crossed, because there will be two or three horses that afterward will get guys jumping off the grandstands because they could have been closer, but they encountered trouble. And this is one of those races, Steve, where you bet it, you keep your fingers crossed, and you view it as a long-term investment. If I play 7, 8, 10 of these races, I will make money. I hope it's today. So I'm keen Channelmaker, but I'm throwing them in with two other horses that I think have got solid credentials. Another Mystery is a really fast horse. He likes Keeneland. Block's been on fire, done great with him. And the horse is arguably as fast as horses that are much less of a price than him. He's, what? Is that 15 to 1 I see? That's absurd. And so those are like my top two selections. And then I'm going really deep for Shoddy, who people are going to think I've lost my mind. But this is something right out of the Steve Bick playbook to me, and that is, if you look at his TGIs, this is the breeding of this horse indicates he'll get better and better and better with age, and sure enough, he's doing exactly that. And sometimes it takes a while, you know. This, I'm not that familiar with Summer Friend as a sire, but if you look at his TGIs, his two-year-olds all the way up to fives and up, let's just listen to the numbers: 17, 15, 13, 10 and three quarter. He's supposed to be getting better as he approaches his five-year-old year. Oh, and what happened? His numbers have done exactly that. So here's a 30-to-1 shot who can complete a trifecta. And another thing, just like with Channelmaker, if you look at his recent numbers, they aren't that his recent finishes aren't impressive. 6th, 4th, and 8th. He'll be tossed by everybody there, unless you're a sheets player and you go, he's actually running faster than ever, or as fast as ever. I like this horse. So I'm boxing those three horses. And I would put Channelmaker more on top. Somebody had a $100 budget for the race, I'd probably Put $60 in an equal box and then maybe $220 with Channel Maker on top to the other two. But they're phenomenal value. And for all the reasons you said, Steve, pace, bedlam, race shape, highly competitive.
You know, and I understand the Channel Maker approach. One question that's worth asking in looking at the figures, and when I say, you know, very often you look at these races at three turn type races, and you see everybody's run in this case pretty much threes, fours, and fives.
Right.
The Mike Maker horses, and Maker has crafted this entire approach of claiming high-priced 62.5, 75,000, 80, even $100,000 claims, a lot of times dirt route horses, and converted them into turf distance runners. And it's been an amazing run, and he's done it with Michael Way and with Paradise Farms, with virtually all of his clients. Red Knight. I mean, Trinity, as it happens, is a homebred Red Knight, but he's done this so successfully. And when you look at the numbers of his horses in these races, there's nothing that would necessarily, you know, make you lean in one direction or another, and it's maddening when he's got, in this case he's got two horses, but there's races like this where he'll have four, and you say to yourself, well, I can't use all the Makers, and then sure enough you use two or three, and then the other one beat you, and you go back and you say, well, I guess, yeah, I mean he was within a point. And that's what makes this to me a challenging configuration, three turns and anything, mm-hmm. anything from about a mile and 3/8 and above, I invariably, my eyes get crossed.
Right. And both the Makers obviously have got great credentials. They're fast horses. And as you just stated so well, he's had phenomenal success in this very kind of venue. But, you know, I look at Red Knight as an example, and you see what happened to him, three starts ago is exactly what we talked about here, is that, you know, going to second turn, bam, it gets sawed in half. And so to me, these races are all about value, all about having a long-term vision, picking the qualified horses, and Jerry will tell you this time in and time out, you have to respect ground loss. So if you get somebody breaking from the 10 or 11 hole and they're paceless, they could be running threes and get beaten by horses who run sixes. And that's why, in my view, Channel Maker's got at least a tactical edge here, where if he can throw another four at them, he might beat horses who loop the field and run a one. And that's really an important aspect of thoroughgraph race visualization, because, you know, a horse goes three wide around a turn versus a horse who stays ground. Well, it's 2 to 3 points right there. That's what the sheets are all about.
And you had Morning Line, and which I do not have. What is Howe Street?
He is 10 to 1.
Well, at 10 to 1, he's the outsider, the interesting horse that I want to include, and what aside from John Gunther, who I'm just a fan of, and I love the fact that he's giving horses to George Abreu, the fact that Howe Street, with that street, is lightly raced. This is a 4-year-old colt that didn't debut until April of last year, and ran well in his debut, going a mile. Then was off for essentially, you know, 8.5 months, comes back and wins at First Asking, first time as a 4-year-old, then gets stretched to a mile and 3/8 in an allowance and romps. And the fact that he, got faster essentially in that stretch out, I think that bodes very well for this next opportunity. So I'm interested at 10 to 1. I'm very interested in Howe Street.
So let's look at the pluses and minuses of him. The plus, the overwhelming plus, beyond what you just said, he has no top. I mean, he hasn't established a level. He's run an 11, a 10, and a 4 with fractions. Who's to say that he can't run a 0 of his next start? Not only that, but his pattern is superb. He's been raced about once, not quite every 2 months, so he's been allowed to develop. I love that word, develop. People forget about it, but he's a 4-year-old. This is the time when he could be doing it. Steve, I can't challenge somebody if they say, I'm going to go 10 to 1 there. My fear only, and it's really the only negative I can give you on him, is that he really doesn't have that much of a base to build on. And he did jump, boy, you know, 6 points forward in his last move. You know, usually that tells me more stall than move forward. But at 10 to 1, if you say, you know, Jeff, I'm taking my chance on him, God bless you. Go for it.
Well, I am impressed on that front. How about the fact that George Abreu has worked the horse out 4 times since that March start? This horse is sound, finally, and I'm not worried about. I'm less of a reaction guy on a lightly raced horse like this. That, you know, that obviously they've taken their time with, and you know, John Gunther. I mean, if this was, you know, a horse that was just a horse, he would have gelded him. There's upside on House Street that doesn't exist with the rest of this field. The rest of this field is a known quantity, so I would rather have something fresh as an approach. So that's my thinking.
Love it. Yep. And he's certainly a horse we have to include in trifectas. There's no doubt about it. And even if he's not in your top choice or two. So
well, you get Flavian Pratt here as well.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, right. Master.
Let's get to the Bathhouse Row. And this race gets interesting because those that were listening the other day heard Steve Asmussen say, when I asked him for his Steve A. lock of the week, which he does provide regularly when he's on, he said he would be surprised if Red Root 1 got beat in here, which is interesting. This is a Preakness tune-up for Red Root 1.
You know, it's so interesting. His best 3 numbers on fast tracks, well, his best 2 numbers on fast tracks are 6s. He's run a 3 3/4 and a 6.5 in sloppy tracks. Those aren't, you know, classic numbers to take you to the next level. And he does have a pretty tight pattern. Getting Lasix today, I understand. I obviously think he's the horse to beat. And Ron Winchell's a friend of mine, so I'm pulling for Ron, certainly. But I don't consider him a walkover by any means. I'm very skeptical, and the pattern is pretty tight. You know, so but the neat thing about him is he's kind of alternating, you know, where he runs a top, reacts. He just reacted, could run back to the top. But given the tightness, I'm actually looking somewhere else. I'm looking to the bottom horse trained by Brad Cox, Tappet Shoes. And for a couple of reasons, one of which we just discussed, you know, when we were talking about the Elkhorn, is that Tappet Shoes has not established a level yet. He's run a 19 on the sloppy track first out. He's been bad every time, by the way, a 10, and now he's paired 7.5. He's got lots of time. And a couple things about him. One is, if you look at his TGIs, another Steve Bick specialty here, if you look at how the Tappets do, I mean, we all know this, but it's nice to see it quantified.
Yep.
Less than a mile, 11.5, a mile and over, 9.5. So here's a horse who's basically saying, both from the top and from the dam side, you know, I'd really prefer to go longer. You know, if you look at Awesome Flowers, a 4-year-old, she ran a 1, man. And ran as a 5-year-old, ran a 0 going 2 turns. So here's a horse that's bred top and bottom to go long, has a great pattern. And here's kind of a little bit of icing on the cake. He's a May 17th foal.
Yep.
So as a 3-year-old, he's been on this planet like 4 or 5 months less than some of the other horses in this race. He's just, just logically, if you're betting on a horse to develop, well, even that aspect is pretty important. So he's the horse that I think that Steve's got to run through in order to win this race.
I absolutely agree. He's also got a very healthy three-year-old look to him, having paired sevens. You made the reference to the sire index, sire being Tappet, and Tappets improve 3 points from age 2 to 3, and that's exactly what you're looking at. Three-year-olds also have a tendency to pair efforts as they grow, as they develop, and there's been plenty of time since February for him to take a next step. Should also note, for those that haven't looked at the siblings, this is Cyberknife's half-brother as well. So you've got a three-year-old development pattern scale, to associate with a horse like this. I mean, he is supposed to, in this spot, take a step forward. The other horse probably that is of interest is Interlock Empire, who's going to save ground inside. Stylistically, he's the same kind of runner as Red Root One, so that's a little problematic, but Cabrera can save ground. If he runs back to that maiden-breaking effort at Oaklawn in March, that 86 on the buyer scale, and a seven
yep.
With the off poorly, that would fit right in here. So, yeah, you got the right attitude that, Red Root won, the horse to beat, but a horse that's proven pace dependent so far this winter. The blinkers, did they help last time? It's hard to know because he didn't really break great. I mean, maybe with a better break, he's more involved. Is this a horse that probably is going to jump up at some point this year and win a nice three-year-old race? Maybe. He could also be one of those Asmussens that wins the West Virginia Derby. It's hard to know, but a good effort is going to put this horse in the Preakness.
There you go. Yeah.
So there it is.
So there it is. Two good races to have some fun with. And what else do you think, Steve?
That's for the most part. The only other thing I would add is that for one of those weekends that is generally thought of as, time-biting until we get to Churchill, there is terrific. The cards are just terrific. Santa Anita is back with a great card. This whole Oaklawn,
yeah.
You got the Oaklawn handicap as well on that card, and another stake. Keeneland is Keeneland and got a good card, and New York, too. Might be a good weekend to play the cross-country, which has got Oakland, Keeneland, and Aqueduct. The turf is in full swing in New York. There's four stakes at Laurel that I haven't even gotten to yet as well again this weekend. We'll talk to Callie Francois tomorrow. So lots of terrific action for weekend warriors. The Saturday should be a great day.
Well, Steve, thanks for having me on. And as always, I would encourage guys to go to thoroughgraph.com. And there's a little green box there. You throw in your email address, and every week you'll be emailed the races that Steve and I are going to be going over. And I think ad nauseum, I have to say this, I'm so gratified by the emails and contact I've gotten from your audience who are asking just killer questions. I mean, these are racing fans. I love it.
Well,
so thanks.
And anybody and everybody, whether it's at Ask the Experts, at the message board, at Thoroughgraph, my website, Derby Trail, you want to ask questions, email us, whatever help we can give you. This is a product that has got so many things for you to latch onto, and a way to differentiate horses at a price that the general public is not seeing. So that you need at least one of those every couple of weeks. It pays for itself, and the more you use it, the better you will do. Jeff Franklin, we'll talk to you from Louisville next week.
Thanks, Steve. Take care, all.
Jeff Franklin, everybody. Let's quickly spin around. I've got about 8 minutes, and we've got to get to Jackie Demerick. And we're going to talk to Jackie. She's off the pony, the Breeze show. She thought that this would be a good window. I'm actually 5 minutes late. We got to everybody today except for Sean, except for Seth Merrow. But we are getting to Jackie Demerick down at the sale. And Jackie, thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve, for having me.
Not at all. We're going to talk about the Ocala Farm Ministries, and you've got a function this weekend with everybody descending on Ocala for the big April sale, bigger than ever, and we'll talk about the sale in a minute, but tell everybody about the ministries and what is going on this weekend.
Well, Steve, we were established in 2003. We don't have a racetrack, as you know, per se, in Ocala, but we have a huge community of horse people, and we found that there were a lot of needs for a chaplaincy, like the RTCA type of a situation.
Sure.
So we got together and established the Ocala Farm Ministry, hired Chaplain Robert Miller, and at that point, he was doing it from his truck, and he was putting, you know, hundreds of thousands of miles on his truck, driving to over 500 farms in this county, and we were able to purchase a 7.5-acre piece of property through, you know, lots of hard work and generous people. We were put in a regulation soccer field. We have our first building with a couple of classrooms and a community center area, church services, etc. We, 2 years ago, received another generous donation and built the La Escuelita, a little school, where we have about 50 kids coming for after school tutoring. We do dental clinics. We do counseling. We do vaccine clinics. We have English language classes. We just basically try to provide for the people. We try to take care of the people who take care of our horses in this community.
Obviously, an area when it comes to the racetrack ministry, just a huge fan of the work, and whether it's child care, whether it's education services, citizenship assistance, every, you know, medical, as you reference. I mean, the work is just it's selfless and tireless, and it needs the support of everybody. Since you don't have a racetrack schedule, all you've got really is the opportunities when everybody comes to Ocala to OBS, and on Sunday 4 to 6, the opportunity for everybody in town as they get ready. You know, they're going to be on the grounds leading up to the sale. They can take part, and the beautiful, you got raffle items, and it looks like a really fun afternoon.
Well, it should be great, and it's super casual. People come right from the barns, come as you are. We're going to have cocktails and heavy appetizers, as you say, plenty of wonderful items. We have, including 4 puppies, but we have all kinds of experiences and some beautiful items for auction, trips, various experiences. At the end of the day, it's all about supporting what we do. And if it weren't for these people and these families, we wouldn't be in business, because, you know, we all need our help. We all need strong families, strong foundations. Our kids, like the kids that are in the after school tutoring program, I just want to brag a little bit. There were 47 children coming in, most of which were failing and their grade levels. We've got 96% of them on the AB honor roll. And we just want to keep up that kind of a thing. We want these kids to, you know, be able to go further in life and have education, have the soccer, have a strong community behind them, because they are so important to what we all do every day.
Well, and what people don't realize, I mean, you come to Ocala for the sale, and yes, there's all kinds of staffing involved, and there's all the, you know, all the farms and you know, all the training centers. Well, they're there year round. They didn't just come to Ocala like you did, to come in for 8 or 10 days.
Exactly, Stephen. And now, I mean, whereas, you know, my husband and I first started 40 years ago, it was pretty much Thoroughbred was the only game in town. But now with WEC and everything happening, I mean, we're the horse capital of the world. I mean, there's so many horses here and so many needs for, you know, good qualified help. And we want to be able to make sure that they are cared for as well as they care for all of our horses.
Well, again, it is Sunday 4 to 6. Right on the OBS grounds, and you know, looking at the tickets are $25. The raffle items, and you mentioned the puppies. There's two Jack Russells. There's a Corgi, who's adorable, and an Australian Shepherd. So there's puppies. There's tickets to the Florida-Tennessee game this fall, 450 yard line seats. Yankees tickets for a weekend series. There's getaways. There's a fishing trip. There's the gourmet barbecue from Chef Roulin. There are all kinds of stuff. That's always one of the fun side, side lights of what goes on. If people want to donate that aren't going to be around as well, Jackie, I'm just looking, OcalaFarmMinistry.org.
Correct. They can go on our website, they can reach out to us, they can reach out to any of us at the sales or on through the website or in person, and we are more than willing to take any donations of any denomination. We're thrilled, and we promise that every cent is put for the good of the people.
Well, and I'll put out if you go to the website, OcalaFarmMinistry.org, you actually have to hit the more. When you see the drop-down menu, there's Home, About Us, Chaplain Bob, News, the Board, which we should also mention, Niall Brennan and Stephanie and you and Nick. But then if you hit More, you'll see Donations, Student Services, and Testimonials. If you go to Donations, you can get more information there. We mentioned Nick, and we got to pull up. And Jackie, I understand he went home. His mom, how's she doing?
She's doing, thank God, very well. She's 93 years old, fell, broke a hip, you know, the thing we all dread, but she seems to be pulling through it and is doing really, really well. So thank you for your concern, and she's a strong lady, and we hope she comes back and dances again with us.
Well, Jackie DeMerrick, everybody, and the sale, we got some sharp breeze times. Looks like the sale is going to be big.
We hope so, and we hope we can carry on. We've got a few of our colts on the Derby Trail, and we're very excited about them, and we hope that we have several more exciting prospects in this bunch, too.
What barn are you guys?
We are in Barn 12. We have the entire Barn 12, and this is our 40th year selling horses out of Barn 12. So 1983 to 2023. Here we go.
Jackie DeMerrick, everybody, and the Ocala Farm Ministry. Jackie, thanks. We'll maybe see you in Kentucky.
All the best, Steve. Thank you for everything you do. Appreciate your help, sir.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Not at all. Jackie DeMerrick, everybody. Jeff Franklin, win with Thoroughgraph, and of course, Sean Clancy, Tony Black, earlier Charlie O'Neill from the Irish Thoroughbred Marketing, and Catherine Mooney and her Isaac Murphy bio. Back for weekend preview tomorrow. Good luck, everybody.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.